What's going on, everybody? Justin Morgenstein back with you on another edition of Phillies Today, as there is plenty to talk about on this edition of Phillies Today, as we had a great two-month run, I would say, after the 9-19 stretch to begin the season. Rob Thompson gets fired, and it felt like maybe that was going to be the low point of the 2026 Phillies. And again, we're skating along, things going well for a while, and then post-All-Star break, and I guess leading or going all the way back to probably late June, early July, you've kind of felt a downward trend with this team, and it feels like they've reached the doldrums again of just an absolute disaster, where they are now 3-9 post-All-Star break, tied for the last wild card spot, that nice little lead in the wild card that they had built up, gone, just like that. And they're 6.5 back at the Braves for the division, while just getting swept by the Marlins, who had coming in to the series had lost 12 straight. So really frustrating times in Phillies land for sure. And again, there's a lot of things I think that are contributing to this. I think there's a lot of things that I guess you could point to as to why that they've been on the skid that they've been to lately. And it just feels like there's been this lackadaisical sort of mentality of let's get to the trade deadline. And I think that was sort of amplified by what Bryce Harper had to say the other day. And that's where we're going to start right now, because I feel like that has been the predominant news of the week, in addition to the struggles down in Miami, is the whole Bryce Harper Nebraska thing. And I'll get to some stuff from the Miami series as well as we go along here. But really frustrating. Like, after the loss on Monday, the Bryce Harper post game basically goes on, to do his post game presser, his media availability, whatever you call it. And he goes to say that basically, you know, we need help, and essentially called out Dave Dombrowski without calling Dave Dombrowski out by name, saying that this team needs help right now. We can't continue to win games as is. And if this team is going to get over the hump, they have to be aggressive at the trade deadline. And I don't think that there was a single lie spoken there. I know some people have taken issue with Bryce saying that. Is it bad timing for Bryce because of the July he's had? Sure. Like, he is having one of the worst stretches he's had as a Philly, and it is very frustrating to watch, and it's even more frustrating because he's had such a good year so far. And I feel like a lot of fans have misdirected their anger at Bryce because of the way he's playing right now, and because the timing of the comments with that obviously don't coincide well together. And I think that's sort of, I don't want to say dumb, but I feel like a lot of Phillies fans are sort of pointing their frustration in the wrong places. And I think the whole organization as a whole has really, over the past 10 months, whether it was the Dombrowski not elite comments about Bryce, whether it was Don Mattingly responding to Bryce after the day after, saying that, you know, I think Bryce just has to worry about, you know, what's on the field, and essentially totally calls out Bryce Harper by saying that Dave Dombrowski knows what he's doing, the front office knows what they're doing, yada, yada, yada. And between that and Dave Dombrowski, his comments in the offseason, it just feels like the Phillies are misdirecting their anger and their frustration towards Bryce Harper. And because of that, the fans see it, and then they point their frustration towards Bryce Harper. And I'm not defending Bryce, because I don't think that there is really a winner in this situation. But where I will defend Bryce is that he didn't say anything that's untrue. And Bryce has been here and has been part of these runs now for almost a half a decade. And I think that eventually, when you're as talented as Bryce Harper, and when you've been on so many teams that are as talented as, you know, those that have been to the postseason in this era, sort of from 22 up to now, I understand where he feels, you know what, we need to have a deadline where we go all in and we're able to sort of fill out the lineup and fill out the bullpen, because I think we're starting to realize what this offseason was sort of unacceptable. And look, injuries have played a part in that. Adolis being out the whole year, Brad Keller now being out the whole year. You know, obviously they bring back Schwarber, which is great, but not really going out and making any significant splashes elsewhere. I think that's sort of where the frustration for Bryce comes from, and I don't understand how you as a fan aren't frustrated at that as well. So that's where I think the anger towards Bryce, I don't really understand at all. I do understand he's playing bad right now, and when you're not playing well and those comments come out and the offense is bad and you're bad, people are going to be frustrated, which they have every right to. But at the same time, I just feel like the organization has misguided their frustrations over the past 10 months to Bryce Harper. And because the organization has done that, a lot of fans have followed suit, which I think is a little ridiculous. And I think that if you look deeper into the issue, this is a Dave Dombrowski issue. This is a Don Mattingly issue, who I'm going to get to in a minute here, who is just, I don't know if you can fire two managers in the season. Like, it started out as a bit for me maybe a couple weeks ago. They're like, haha, we should, you know, fire Don Mattingly and get Dusty Wathan or someone in there to just create another manager change so they play better. Don Mattingly is, like, actively losing them games right now. And that the bullpen decisions, especially on Wednesday down in Miami, I've talked about on the pod the last couple of weeks how they have just been really frustrating. And certainly in some high-leverage situations, it feels like he has not, you know, made smart decisions at all. If he has had no feel for his starters, for the bullpen, for the pitching staff as a whole, he is actively losing them some of these games, especially on Wednesday, where he... And I might as well get to some of the points of the Miami series right now, where he goes to Seth Johnson, where, again, the whole Seth Johnson thing is hilarious to me because I understand, yes, he can throw 100 miles an hour. That's great. But so many guys throw with velocity now to where if your stuff isn't good enough, you can't just throw velocity and get away with it, which I don't understand what Don Mattingly is seeing in Seth Johnson, where it feels like he is entering the game every single day. And I just feel like every time they pan to the bullpen on TV, you're in the stadium, you're looking out there, Seth Johnson is warming up at the bullpen. And newsflash, he is not that good. So whether you want to make him a high leverage reliever or you have plans to make, like, that is not who he is. That is not Seth Johnson. So he put Seth Johnson in the game up two runs in the seventh on Wednesday. And they had already, you know, made some poor decisions. I think Lizardo, didn't make the best decision in terms of, who to sort of go after and who to not go after late in the start there. So some of that is on him. But I also think that Don Mattingly, putting Seth Johnson in that spot where you're up 6-0, the lead is down to 6-4, you're about to get swept by a team who stinks lately, you have to win that game. For him to go to Seth Johnson and be like, oh, well, I hope it works out, was absurd. And I understand that they had guys down. Like, Kirkering was down. Alvarado was probably down. But you got to hold the lead. Like, in that situation, you have to hold the lead. And whether maybe you wanted to pitch him multiple innings or whatever it was, there was no reason for Seth Johnson to enter that game in the seventh inning. And then Bolin comes in the eighth inning, and I understand he gives up the home run, whatever. But, like, it was clearly his spot there. So the fact that I was stunned that he was in that game and the fact that they got the home run was, like, just very, very frustrating and just capped off a very frustrating, I think, couple of weeks of Phillies baseball, really, after the All-Star break. And we're going to get into the trade deadline stuff, obviously, here as well. But they have put themselves in a pretty bad spot in terms of being, you know, pretty solidified in the playoff picture to now you've got to make deadline acquisitions to not just get you over the top in the postseason, but you got to make acquisitions to get you in to the postseason, because that is not a given right now. They are tied for the third wild card spot, and the Padres are only a game and a half behind them right now. Like I said, 6.5 games behind the Braves now. You had that down to 3. And it just feels like this whole thing is sort of starting to unravel, and the Bryce and Mattingly thing sort of capped that off. And it's been a frustrating couple of weeks for sure here. But we'll see if they can bounce back this weekend. Again, they have a big trade deadline on Monday that I think that they still should buy for. I, you know, out of frustration a couple times, have been like, oh, I'm done. Like, they should see what they should get for Duran, blah, 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 blah. Just out of pure frustration watching these games. You know, once I come back to my senses and settle down a little bit, I think to myself, I think owe it to themselves to go out and pursue, you know, real difference makers at this deadline. And the strategy I'm going to talk about here is one that I've kind of talked about the last couple of years, but they haven't really been able to go out and execute. And that is to sort of mimic the 2021 Braves trade deadline a little bit, to where they go out and they get a bunch of different guys who can impact the game and maybe aren't the stars that you're seeing, like the Scoobles of the world, and some, you know, players of that ilk who might get, or the Lindors that might get traded at the deadline. But you go and you throw a bunch of darts at the dartboard and you see what sticks. And the Braves did that unbelievably in 21 and rode it all the way to a World Series. They got Eddie Rosario at the deadline. They got Jock Peterson at the deadline. They got Jorge Soler, the World Series MVP, at the deadline. And there's a couple others I'm missing too. So Adam Duvall was another one that they got. who made a big impact for them. So if you're able to sort of collect a bunch of different guys, and I think this team needs sort of a facelift in a way to where you can trade some of your major league talent. Like, you should not be afraid to deal Alec Bohm. You should, I think, even though I like him as a player, not be afraid to deal Bryson Stott. You should not be afraid to deal Justin Crawford in some of these potential trades. So if that's what sort of gives them the facelift and the shakeup that they need, I'm totally okay with that. So I want to go over some of the potential possibilities here and see, you know, how I'm feeling about it as rumors start to swirl around the Phillies and the trade deadline here. That's coming up on Monday, which is crazy to think about. Feels like the, you know, season, it's been a long season. It does feel like the 9-19 start was forever ago at this point, but you know, they need some help badly. And I think that unfortunately the team is gone into this with the mentality of just get us to the trade deadline because we need reinforcements and we need help. So a couple names, I'm just sort of going to go by team here of guys who I think could be possibilities for them. You got Joe Adell and Zach Neto from the Angels, who has really sort of come on here as a name that the Phillies could potentially end up trading for, and which, of course, he's a shortstop. It would involve Trey Turner moving. It would involve potentially him moving to second, Bryson Stott moving to third, which is interesting. I don't know how much I love Bryson Stott moving to third, especially because I think he's a great shortstop, let alone, you know, second baseman. But moving him to third base, I think, would be something that would be interesting. I don't know how much I'd love it. But the thing with Zach Neto that sort of, I guess, confuses me a little bit, specifically with the Angels and their approach to the deadline, is, you know, Zach Neto, from the outside looking in, was a pretty good player. Like, pretty good bat, decent in the field. I think it's like the highest double play turn rate among shortstops in baseball. DRS and OAA have him graded out as a pretty decent shortstop, pretty good fielder. So that is obviously something in addition to the double plays, which the Phillies really seem to have trouble turning sometimes, would be a positive. But I don't understand why the Angels are so, I guess, you know, willing to move off of him, because he's a young player with a bunch of control. And as somebody that, for a team that really doesn't have much excitement or much draw to the ballpark, why would you be looking to get off of Zach Neto right now? So that's where my antenna's up a little bit. Again, I think he is a good player. I would be excited about it, but I don't know if he is a super, super impact guy to where you're saying to yourself, like, okay, now this team is in contention. So it kind of goes against the sort of mentality that I had been, you know, talking about with the Braves deadline and the way they did it in 21 by just, you know, launching a bunch of darts at the dartboard and seeing what sticks. So I think that's where I would be hesitant to sort of trade for him, because I don't know if I want to give up a ton of prospect capital for Zach Neto to where you're really depleting the farm system, which feels already depleted, to go get a shortstop, especially because that's not the biggest concern on the team. I know that obviously Trey has been an issue, and that's something, a totally different issue in itself. But a lot of chase, a lot of strikeouts, so doesn't really, I think, help that aspect of the team either. But Joe Adell, another guy, has been someone I've wanted now for a couple years. I think it would cost you a little less than Zach Neto. Helps because he's a right-handed bat in addition to Neto, so that would be a good thing there as well. And look, I feel like the Angels are just always trying to move off guys, and their front office isn't, I would say, the smartest in baseball. They actually just got off of Logan Ohapi, which has been, looking back, one of Dave Dombrowski's best trades. Logan Ohapi was traded to the Texas Rangers this past week, and the Brandon Marsh for Logan Ohapi swap in 2022 is looking better and better by, you know, the year here. So that ended up being a good deal by Dave Dombrowski. It feels like those deals along the margins, too, he has gotten right for the most part. Like the Sosa trade, even though Sosa has been, you know, pretty brutal lately, for Jojo Romero felt like a really good between the margins type of deal. Hey, we saw this offseason, the Matt Strom for Jonathan Bolin deal is looking like an awesome trade for the Phillies. So he's been pretty good at those minor moves to where you're not going for the big splash, but you're making a trade for somebody who can make an impact right away and, you know, not giving up one of your bigger prospects for him. So that's kind of the route I think they should go, and I think that that's maybe what you could trick the Angels into doing, for lack of a better word. So we'll see it there. But I will also talk about the Blue Jays feel like a big suitor for the Phillies here, as they're looking to get off a bunch of guys. Really disappointing year coming off the World Series appearance. And, hey, they were a freaking Miguel Rojas home run away from winning the World Series there in the ninth inning. So they're looking to get off a bunch of guys. I think the guys that the Phillies would have the most interest in, Dalton Varsho has been brought up a bunch. Famously coined, his name is coined after Darren Dalton, as his dad played here in Philadelphia. So that's a neat little connection. And I think that despite being a left-handed bat, he would fit pretty well, just being an outfielder, being somebody who has had success at the major league level in terms of being in the middle of your lineup. Hasn't had, I think, the greatest year, but at the same time, like, I think would be a big addition for this offense, just considering what they've got right now. But I will say, again, doesn't chase a lot, doesn't strike out a ton. Would like to see him walk a little bit more, but the numbers aren't, you know, as great as you would like. Still an OPS this year under 700, but last year OPS was over 800, 832, had 20 home runs, so that would be an ideal guy to put in this lineup. But again, the left-handed thing does make it a little more difficult. And you got George Springer, who is on a bad contract. It's probably too much money for them to take on, so I don't think that's happening. But another two pitchers that they are potentially looking to get rid of that I think the Phillies could really make a play for here is Kevin Gausman, who has had a ton of success, as we know, at the major league level, and has been really, really good for the Blue Jays over the past few years, and would be somebody who would come right into this rotation and be able to take down a bunch of innings. And I mentioned at the top, this team now, they're not building for the postseason. They are building to get themselves into the postseason. And that's the unfortunate reality of the situation. So I think Kevin Gausman would be somebody who would really help them do that. And somebody who, as we know right now, like, they're throwing a bullpen game every 5 days, and you just sort of hope and pray that Aaron Nola doesn't blow up, you know, every fifth day. And he had a good start down in Miami, which was good to see. And of course, they end up losing that game. But Kevin Gausman would be a nice addition, especially if and when you would get into the postseason, you would have three starters you feel really comfortable about throwing. So in theory, if you didn't get as many bullpen arms at the deadline and you still made the postseason, you could stick Lizardo in the bullpen or do something like that to sort of, you know, stretch out the staff a little bit and be able to fill out your bullpen as well there in the postseason. And one guy from the bullpen who is a familiar face that could, you know, I think definitely be traded here is Jeff Hoffman, who ever since leaving the Phillies has not had the same success that he's had, you know, when he was here in 23 and 24. I don't think that obviously he has a great relationship with Caleb Cotham, and he, you know, the famous story was he was pitching batting practice to Bryce after he was hurt, and that's sort of when he came on, former first-round pick, obviously, but has not had great numbers this year. And Louis Varland, who has been really, really good for the Blue Jays, has taken over their closer role. So wouldn't be shocked if the Blue Jays were trying to get off Jeff Hoffman. I don't think he's the same Jeff Hoffman that we saw in 23-24, but I think he is a reliable arm in the bullpen that, you know, you could trust over guys like Seth Johnson and guys of that nature there. So I think Jeff Hoffman is a serious possibility for the Phillies here. So, those are the Blue Jays guys. Would not be shocked at all if one of those Blue Jays ended up on the Phillies. So I want to talk about some of the Mets guys here. Definitely your bullpen watching for the Mets. Like, I don't think they're going to be in the Lindor sweepstakes. I don't think they're going to be in the Luis Robert sweepstakes, just because it's a little too much money to take on. You don't really want to spend $20 million on an outfielder that never plays at all, even though the right-handed bat would be useful for this team. But I think you're bullpen hunting if you're going to trade with the Mets. And the three guys are Luke Weaver, AJ Minner, Brooks Raley. I think Luke Weaver is going to cost a ton, especially because he's under control next year. You know, looking back, it's tough because Brad Keller, I really liked the signing when it happened, but the injuries and just him, even before the injuries, he really wasn't performing well. It was kind of Luke Weaver or Keller. They got very similar contracts, and they might have chose the wrong one in that scenario, where Luke Weaver's had a really good year for the Mets. So I think that might end up kind of being a haul, especially because there's another year of team control next year. So we'll see about that. But I think AJ Minner is a really good possibility. They need a left-handed arm out of the bullpen. He's a little older, so it won't, you know, cost you a lot of prospect capital. And I think he would be a really effective guy to have as, you know, potentially your first lefty out of the pen here. You know, and then you have Alvarado and the rest of the guys sort of under him, Meza and what have you. So I think that that's a real possibility for the Phillies, and I think that it wouldn't cost them too much. And Brooks Raley is another guy that could help sort of fill out the depth of the bullpen there. And another team I think definitely is going to be sellers. And again, there's a lot less sellers now because the Red Sox have gotten hot. Some other teams, the Padres, have gotten a little hotter. So I was really in on, like, some of the Padres relievers. But again, they're only 1.5 games behind the Phillies now. So they are probably not going to be selling at the trade deadline. So One team that will be trading, though, is the Kansas City Royals. And one guy who I wouldn't get super excited about, but has been somebody who in the past has definitely been a name that's been brought up with the Phillies at deadlines, is Lane Thomas. And Lane Thomas a few years ago would have been a really nice bat to add. But I also think he's a little older, a little less mobile in the outfield. Obviously, his numbers offensively declined a little bit, but the fit is there for sure. And just to mention some more names, I think Brady Singer is one to watch from the Reds and, you know, hasn't had the best numbers, especially since being traded to Cincinnati a few years ago. And I think for Jonathan India, but did pitch 7 very good innings against the Phillies offense a few weeks ago, which doesn't seem like that's the hardest thing to do these days. But, you know, could be an option there as a back end starter. Again, probably wouldn't have to give up too much prospect capital. Taylor Ward has been a name that I've mentioned plenty of times before as well, and probably fits the bill of just a strictly right-handed power bat the most, where I would say, okay, you know, they got Taylor Ward, and if they didn't have to give up a ton for him, especially considering he's on a 1-year deal, I'd be pretty happy with that as well. So, again, just some other names in terms of outfielders. Elliot Ramos from the Giants, I think, could be a good fit, especially, again, right-handed bat, outfield. I think that's probably going to be something that they definitely end up addressing, whether they end up addressing the starting rotation or the bullpen. I think they probably end up doing one or the other, probably the bullpen if I had to lean one way or the other, but they definitely end up getting a bat, I think, for sure. So Taylor Ward definitely fits the bill there, and Elliot Ramos as well. Randy Arozarena, another guy who probably they should have traded for 2 years ago and would have fit this team perfectly, but hey, might as well, you know, right your wrongs now and trade for Randy this deadline. And another one who's not right-handed but I think is interesting is Jake McCarthy from Colorado. I've kind of liked him as a player for a little while now, especially, I mean, even going back to the 2023 CS there. But fast, can hit for a little power. Obviously, you have the Coors effect where his home splits are a little better than his road splits, but I do think he is a dynamic player. And if they wanted to add multiple bats, I think a Jake McCarthy trade could be something that's interesting, especially since the Phillies, you know, defensively are probably the worst team in baseball right now, and he is certainly a plus defender out there in the outfield. So, again, hopefully they take multiple cracks at this thing and sort of acquire a bunch of different guys, whether that's shaking up the major league roster or giving up some of your lower-end prospects. I would be good with that. I just don't think that they're going to end up giving up, you know, some of these guys like Aiden Miller and Francisco Renteria. I just don't think that they're close enough to, you know, being in real contention to end up doing that. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they end up going out there and being really aggressive and, you know, making a move for a big-time superstar like Tarek Skubal or Lindor or some of the guys that we've talked about. But I really just don't see that being the case as of right now. But it is on Monday. It will be exciting, and hopefully, you know, they give them a reason this weekend to potentially go out and make some moves at the deadline. So let's get to this weekend as we enter, you know, another series of Phillies baseball against a bad team, which just seems to be the worst right now, whether it was the Mets series out of the break, whether it was this Marlins series, and now in Baltimore. We will see how this one ends up going, as started out with a bullpen game on Friday night. I'm guessing it'll probably end up being Tim Mesa again. It didn't go bad against the Yankees, I will say, in the last start, even though you had Brian Keller up there, who just, you know, probably a nice guy, but just throws absolute slop up there and nothing very exciting. So you got a bullpen game going up against Brandon Young, who's actually had a pretty good year, 3.13 ERA in, 15 starts this year. So 17 starts, excuse me. So pretty good stuff for him. 97 innings pitch, again, 80 strikeouts. So not bad stuff from Brandon Young. So they'll face him on Friday. And then on Saturday, you've got Sanchi versus Shane Baz, who Shane Baz I've always sort of liked as an arm going back to Tampa, and, you know, but just got hit around a bunch, it felt like, last year and early part of this year, but has really sort of locked it in as of late, and has his ERA back down under 4. It was over 5 at one point, but, you know, in his last few games started, has been pretty good, actually. You know, gave up just 1 earned run against Atlanta, 1 earned run against Boston, 2 earned runs against Kansas City, 3 earned runs against Chicago, so has had some pretty good starts lately, so we will see how that ends up going for the Phils. And then Sunday, you got Zach Wheeler, who's looking to bounce back after a pretty concerning start, I would say, just in terms of him finally looking fatigued for the first time. And he just said it was one of those nights, so I'm hoping that it was just one of those nights. He will go up against Kyle Bradish, who has also had a pretty good year down there in Baltimore for the Orioles. So That's going to wrap it up for this edition of Phillies Today. Thank you, as always, for listening, and we will see what happens with the deadline. I am going on vacation next week, so I won't have a pod, but we will be back to talk about it sooner rather than later, of course. So thank you, as always, for tuning in for Phillies 24/7. This has been Justin Morgenstein. Have a good one, everyone. I'll see you.